Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Colombo Chronicles with the Rose Colombo, live every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. We did change our time, so be sure to mark that on your computer or in your book, your little white book. I hope everyone had a wonderful 4th of July week. It seems like a lot of people went on vacation because the 4th of July fell on hump day, Wednesday, and that's the middle of the week. I know in England that means something else, hump day, but in America it means it's the middle of the week and you only have 2 days in front of you to work or 2 days behind you that you've already worked during the middle of your work week, and that possibly gave you the advantage to take off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before or after the holiday, because there was a lot less traffic, I was happy to say, on the freeway. So I hope everybody had a safe, wonderful, and happy Independence Day. And, of course, as you know, that's exactly what we do. We fight for justice, and we also fight back against legal abuse. And on that note, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back in a moment.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening.
Perfect.
Colombo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Colombo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColomboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Colombo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com.
That's right. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com. And you can ask any question you like about anything that's bothering you on your mind. That's appropriate, of course, especially if it has to do with injustices, family law, custody, child support, spousal support, your lawyer, good or bad, and the judge. I like to hear about the judge's decisions. And also elder abuse, anything that you find is a concern of yours, just check out ColomboChronicles.com and you can join. And there's a money-back guarantee, of course, if you're unhappy for any reason. And submit your questions. And you'll be hopefully pleased with your suggestions and a little bit of guidance there.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Okay, so today's trivia on Colombo Chronicles Live is constructing the Statue of Liberty in Paris. And I found that on Life's
Livestol, I guess it's called. It's Livestly. And it says that in this photograph in the 1880s, it dates back all the way to the 1880s, the Lady Liberty isn't quite ready back then to make her New York City debut yet. It was under construction. And instead, it stated that she was still being constructed in Paris. Did you know that the Statue of Liberty was constructed in Paris under the guidance of French engineer Gustave Eiffel? Now, that's interesting. It was constructed in Paris by French engineer Gustave Eiffel, who was also responsible for, you guessed it, of course, the Eiffel Tower. The lady was the lady, and she was finally unveiled on October 28, 1886. I thought that was quite interesting, especially since we just celebrated our Independence Day. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, a little bit of today's trivia. And today we're going to have an extremely important guest because he's been on our show before, and he is the expert and the author of 15 books on taxes. He is the guy, the go-to guy. And let me tell you, Dan Pilla. Dan Pilla has quite an extensive background and quite a story as well as how he became the expert seen on major TV, radio, magazines, and newspapers. And for four decades, Dan Pilla has been the nation's leader in taxpayers' rights, in their defense, and IRS abuse prevention and cure. And he's regarded as one of the country's premier experts in IRS procedures. He's helped countless thousands of citizens solve personal and business tax problems they thought they might never be resolved. In fact, I knew a gentleman, dear friend, and he joined my organization, which was Women Fight Back, but we had a lot of men fighting back with us because they came across some injustices as well. His particular problem ended up in a divorce because his lawyer had instructed him to sign a paper which he didn't understand. That at the time, he didn't explain it to him, that he was giving up his constitutional right to barter with the IRS. And so his tax issue, after he paid his lawyer with his business partner $350,000, ended up in a very long, expensive court case. It went from bankruptcy of his business into divorce. And his wife left him. His children wouldn't speak to him because he could not resolve his tax issue. And $100,000 tax issue, because of his lawyer's advice, bad advice, when he signed that document, led to a $1 million debt with penalties and punishment that came along with that tax debt. And he tried everyone. I mean, he paid lawyers after lawyer after lawyer who said they were experts. They could not resolve his problem until 20 years later when he was finally came across a person who finally could help him resolve that issue. Had he known about Dan Pilla and his expertise, he probably could have saved himself at least 19 years rather than spending 20 years in the system, losing everything, his business, his home, his family, his vacation homes, and so forth. Spending 20 years paying lawyers for the next 19 years to try and resolve a problem that Dan Pilla could have probably helped him resolve within a year or so, or maybe even sooner. So this is why we need to know about Dan Pilla, because the tax man could come knocking on your door at any moment or sending you a letter in the mail. We always hope and pray that we don't hear from them, because it puts fear in our minds and runs chills down our spine. So you definitely are in luck today, because Dan Pilla is the man to go to if you have tax questions or tax issues, or you need self-help, because he's written 15 books that help you know more, gain more knowledge, empowerment, enlightenment, so you can be proactive and seek out his consultation if you need to and resolve your problem much quicker than 20 years down the road. To Dan in just a few minutes. And now we're going to enter into the world of politics just for a couple of minutes here, because I came across an issue that says Trump is right about the NATO deadbeat. And, of course, this has to do with finances and America's finances. Has to do with the taxpayers who fund everything that the federal government does. We fund their wages. We fund every program that they approve of. The money does not come from the government. The money belongs to we the people, the taxpayers, and we elect them to be responsible for our tax dollars that they collect to fund specific agendas of specific programs that benefit the American people, which we are not seeing happening in today's world, and it hasn't been happening for quite a while. So this is a huge issue for the taxpayers in America, and it's a huge issue for the Europeans as well. But President Trump isn't mincing any words. President Trump has consistently railed against other members of the NATO Security Alliance for freeloading off the United States and not doing enough to manage their own defense. Now, he's the only one with a backbone who's actually come out, confronted them, and made these statements. NATO has not treated us fairly, President Trump said, before leaving for a NATO summit, which met in Brussels. We pay far too much, and they pay far too little. As with many Trump crusades, there's truth to his claims. You know, you can't run a country if you're just collecting the tax dollars and just recklessly spending them for foreign enemy nations or foreign friendly nations while they're sitting back collecting it and not putting in their fair share. You can't run a business that way. You'll go bankrupt, and so will a country. For more European defense spending at this week's meeting, which he did, and that was likely to be contentious, which it was. Other NATO members are already pushing back, arguing that their commitment to defense is rising and they back U.S. priorities in other important ways. Well, let us see the money. Let us see your money instead of just our money. But the basic numbers support Trump. The United States has been the biggest contributor to NATO since Western nations founded the alliance in 1949. To help prevent any more world wars and shield Europe from the Soviet Union. Well, what about the terrorist nations? Hello. Underpayments by European nations have been contentious since even before Trump started complaining about the problem, especially following the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, when many nations began to slash defense spending. In 2014, NATO agreed that each member country, should spend a minimum of 2% of GDP on defense within a decade. So far, only five countries meet that threshold: United Kingdom, Greece, Estonia, and Latvia. The United States spends 3.5% of GDP on defense, the most of any NATO member. So Trump isn't just blowing smoke. This has been going on since 1949. Among other big NATO members, France spends 1.8% of GDP on defense. Germany spends 1.2%. Italy spends 1.2%. And Spain spends 0.9%. So you can see the disparities between the country and the United States. And NATO has 29 member countries. And so you can go on to yahoo.com and you can read the disparities and see the various countries that belong to NATO and what they are contributing to NATO, because America is contributing the most in tax dollars for many decades. That's since 1949. And it's time that America wakes up and wakes up the Europeans to contribute to their fair share of taxes as well. And speaking of taxes, we're about to enter into the world of authors and experts. And like I mentioned, Bupila, he's returning, and he's going to tell us about the latest issues on the taxes that affect each of us. Also, I want to ask him about the Jobs Act of 2017, and we have many more questions about what's going on with our taxes. And remember that Dan has written or contributed to major articles for Reader's Digest, National Review, USA Today, and many, many others. The Associated Press once commented that Dan Pilla probably knows more about the IRS than the commissioner. The Wall Street Journal ranked Dan Pilla's book, The IRS, among 15 books that he has written, The IRS Problem Solver, as the number one tax book in America. And so there you have it. So why don't we just get started, and let's welcome Dan Pilla to Columbo Chronicles. Hi, Dan. How are you today?
I am well. I am well, Rose. How are you?
I'm doing great, and so far. Don't want to jinx that one. we're so thrilled to have you back with us today, because people just either filed their taxes not long ago, or they're still filing their taxes like I did, an extension. And but there's so many questions now that are on the minds of so many people. And so why don't you tell us how the new tax legislation that was implemented in 2017 is affecting the taxpayers today? Are there any real issues that people are bringing to you?
Well, there's a number of questions, Rose, and concerns about the Tax Act, for sure. First of all, the Jobs Act and the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act goes into effect January of 2018. So it applies to what's going on in 2018. It does not have any impact, Rose, on 2017 tax returns. So people that are now scrambling around to get their 2017 tax returns, like me, for example, that are on an extension, right? I filed an extension in April, and so I got until October to file my return. And there's millions of people that do that every year for all kinds of reasons. And so the Jobs Act will have no impact whatsoever on those tax returns, because that's all 2017 tax law that applies. It's going to be 2018. So there are a couple of questions here in 2018 based on the tax, the Jobs Act. And the first thing is our tax is going to go up or tax is going to go down. Well, the answer to that question depends on your facts and circumstances. But in the analyses that I've done and the things that I've read, it looks like, Rose, about 80% of the people out there are going to see a tax cut as a result of the Jobs Act. I think taxes are going to go down considerably for most people. As I said, 80%. It appears that the people that are going to get the largest component of the tax breaks are the folks that fall into the, you know, approximately $35,000 up to about $85,000 to $90,000 a year of income. So, you know, what you would call the heart of the middle class, more or less, are going to see the largest percentage of tax reductions. The people that are in the highest tax brackets are going to see actually probably an increase in their tax liabilities a little bit because of the adjustments to some of the deductions that have been that have in some cases eliminated, in some cases reduced. And so, you know, and so now the biggest area of benefit, I think, for is going to come to small business people, people that are self-employed, people that are, again, in that middle class category, because there is a new 20% deduction that's available for small businesses, and this is available for self-employed people that are filing forms Schedule C that are sole proprietorships or subchapter S corporations or partnerships. These small business folks get this new deduction under Code Section 199A that gives them a 20% deduction as long as their taxable income, if they're married filing jointly, as long as their taxable income is under $425,000, and for a single person as long as it's under $207,500, then you're going to get this 20% deduction. Now, there's a lot of complications with this deduction. It's not a simple matter, and so it would be very convoluting to go into it in detail here. But the bottom line is you got to talk to your tax professional about that if you're a self-employed person, to see if you're going to benefit from that deduction. But as I said, I think most people are going to benefit from the deduction. There's another area that's causing a little bit of confusion. And that's the question of whether this is again for businesses. Now the question is whether the deduction for meals incurred in connection with your business has been eliminated. Some people are confused about that and believe that it's been completely eliminated. I do not believe that that's what the law says. I think there's a limitation on entertainment expenses, but I don't believe there's a limitation on business meals that don't constitute entertainment. And that's something we could discuss a little bit, because there's some issues there. And of course, the bottom line for folks is what about those people that can't pay their taxes, that have tax debt problems right now, that they need to know that there was nothing in the Jobs Act, Rose, that changed any of the programs that are available to reduce or eliminate tax bills that you owe and can't pay. And so those folks that are dealing with wage levies, bank levies, property seizures, tax liens, any of that sort of thing, they still have available to them the settlement programs that I talk about in my book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, that allow you to go in and negotiate with the IRS to get these problems solved.
Okay, so, I think that sounds really good for the self-employed business people, because, most of our jobs come from small businesses. So I think that the good thing that Trump is concentrating on is small business in America. And so then what about charities? I mean, does it affect reduce or increase or wipe it out when we contribute to charities? Does it affect charities contributions?
Well, no, it does not affect charitable contributions. You still have the deduction for charitable contributions. You still have the deduction for mortgage interest, although the cap on the amount of the loan has been reduced. Prior to the Jobs Act, you could only deduct interest on a loan up to $1 million, and to the extent that the loan exceeded $1 million, the portion of interest attributable to to the amount over $1 million was not deductible. That ceiling has now been brought down to $750,000. So as long as your home mortgage is under $750,000, you're not going to have a problem deducting your mortgage interest. All right, so no change there. As far as charitable contributions are concerned, likewise, no change there. What has changed, though, Rose, and this is going to have an impact on people, and it's going to be an impact probably beneficial for more people than it's detrimental to, and that is this. The standard deduction has been doubled. All right, so for a married filing joint, approximately doubled, not quite double, but so for a married filing jointly tax return, the prior standard deduction was just over $12,000. I think it was like $12,600 or $12,800. All right, and so to the extent that your itemized deductions exceeded the standard deduction, you're better off claiming itemized. So let's say, for example, your itemized deductions for mortgage interest, charitable contributions, real estate taxes, that sort of thing. Let's say all of that equaled $20,000. Well, you're obviously better off claiming the itemized deductions at $20,000 than the standard deduction at $12,600. But now the deduction for married filing jointly has gone to $24,000. So if you got the same $20,000 worth of itemized deductions, you're better off claiming the standard deduction at $24,000. So people say, well, you lose your home mortgage. Well, you don't lose it. You're just better off claiming the standard deduction than the itemized deduction because the amount is higher. It's as simple as that.
So then what about capital gains then? If you sell an appreciated asset, will you now pay less? Or what's going to happen with capital gains?
Capital gains treatments are basically the same under the Tax Cuts and Job. They're basically the same, Rose. So you've got the appreciated assets that are taxed at different rates based on long term or short term capital gains, and that hasn't changed.
What about when people inherit money? Do they pay taxes on that capital gain?
Well, inherited assets, Rose, inherited, whether it's cash or property or whatever, has never been taxed. Inheritances always come to the beneficiaries free of tax, or I should say net of tax, because if there's a tax at the estate level, then the estate pays the tax, and what's distributed to the beneficiaries net of that comes to the beneficiaries tax-free. Now, if you're under the estate cap, which I think is about $5 million, I believe, and then there was some changes to that in the Tax Act, too, the Jobs Act, that increased that threshold considerably. So if you're under the threshold, let's say your estate's worth $1 million, let's say, and you're way below the threshold where the estate tax kicks in, and let's say that estate consists of some cash in a savings account and some real estate. Well, that money is distributed. The cash is distributed to the beneficiaries. They get that tax free, and when they inherit the real estate, then their basis in the real estate is equal to the fair market value of the real estate on the day that the decedent dies, and so they get what's called a stepped-up basis. So let's say the house is worth $500,000, and so that gets distributed to the beneficiaries, their basis in the home then, regardless of what the cost price was to the decedent, the basis in the home is that $500,000 fair market value. And let's say they sell the house for a year later for $600,000. Well, their gain then is $100,000, not $600,000.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. So what about estate planning? Do you recommend estate planning for people who,
Rose, you certainly need to consider estate planning if you've got an estate that's in the range of a taxable estate. There's no question about that, and we're talking north of $5 million. But even at that, elder care planning is important now. I mean, if you've got elderly parents that are facing, potential nursing home issues, those kinds of things. I mean, those are things you got to look at. Now, that's not work that I do, Rose. So, I mean, it's not an area that I can discuss, very specifically, except very generally, I would tell you that, in this age of very expensive health care and very expensive long-term living, elderly care assistance, you should get some planning for sure.
Okay. So why did the Democrats then have so much disdain for Trump's new tax plan? think?
Well, because Democrats hate tax cuts, Rose. The bottom line is Democrats believe that all of the money in the economy belongs to the government. And they believe that they have the right to control every dime that you earn and that they can dole that money back to you in some way that suits them and suits their interests and allows for the growth of the state. You got to understand that Democrats love taxes for the sake of taxes, because the more money you pay in taxes, the more power is transmitted from the individual to the government. And that's what these leftist Democrats want, Rose. They want to control your life. They want to control the economy. They want to be able to dictate from Washington who wins and who loses, and that's why taxes are a matter of religion with the left.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, because the more people they traffic into our country, the higher taxes continue to increase, because somebody has to pay for the detention, for the for all of the Border Patrol, the ICE, the sheriffs to control those areas. And then the prison system increases. And so, I mean, and then you've got to pay all the entitlement programs for all these people to eat.
Well, you're exactly right, Rose. And we don't even have to get to the question of immigration and trafficking people into America. I mean, the left has been pushing taxes as a matter of religion for decades, for all kinds of reasons, and it's, you know, it's only in the last probably 10 or 15 years or so that the illegal immigration issue has been such a major issue in the United States. The United States is no stranger to immigration. We've been getting people coming to this country for liberty and economic opportunities for centuries. We've been in existence 242 years, and for a good 200 of those years, people have been fleeing to America for economic opportunity and liberty. So that's there's nothing wrong with that, as long as it's done legally and properly. I think we all agree with that. But the fact
Absolutely.
Of the matter is that the left encourages this because of the power that it transmits to government to control the marketplace and control the lives of people by essentially wringing their lifeblood out of them in the form of their earnings. That's what it amounts to.
Yeah, and the bottom line is that we either have laws or we don't have laws, and we either have quotas or we don't have quotas. And the reason we have laws and quotas is so that we can identify everybody in the country, know who your neighbors are, your teachers, your public servants, and so forth, and that we are following. That's what they're paid to do, uphold and follow the laws, which include immigration laws. And if
people
are here as refugees or asylum seekers, then they need to also be vetted to make sure that that's exactly who they are and aren't foreign spies. I mean, there's so many reasons for it, you know. So I agree with that legal and lawful immigration. But going back to the taxes in America for Americans, don't you have a complimentary guide that you offer to people as well as your 15 books?
Yeah, we have a lot. We actually have a lot of information on our website, Rose, that is available complimentary. We got a number of research reports and articles and so forth that I've written. My website is danpilla.com. That's one word, danpilla.com. And folks can go to that website, Rose, and check that out. And we've got all kinds of resources available on the website that folks can look at, yes, including access, of course, to my books. And then a couple of my most recent books, How to Win Your Tax Audit, and then How to Get Tax Amnesty.
Yeah, and then so can you give us a tip, like how can you use the new standard deduction to save taxes over a two-year period?
Well, I mean, just for example, the important thing to understand here now is that the standard deduction amount has doubled, right? It's gone from about $12,600 for a married couple to $24,000. And so if you've got a lot of expenses, let's say you load certain expenses into 1 year, like charitable giving, for example, you can load into 1 year. And by giving substantial amounts in 1 year, you increase your deduction above $24,000, you claim it in that year, but then you're not claiming as much, you're not giving as much the next year, and so you wouldn't, and so in that case, you'd claim the $24,000 standard deduction, and in that way, you can increase your deductions over a two-year period of time higher than you might otherwise get.
Okay, so what about people who invest in the stock market, and then when their taxes come up, do they have to pay taxes on the stocks that they're making earnings on, or do they wait until they pull out their money? How does that
work? A stock can be taxed in one of two ways, Rose. It's either taxed as a capital asset. So if you buy the stock for $1 per share and you sell it for $1.50, then you've got a capital gain equal to 50 cents per share, and it's either a long-term gain or a short-term gain depending on how long you held the stock. So in terms of capital gain, Rose, the stock is taxed when you sell it. All right, you've got to divest yourself of the asset in order for the gain to be locked in, or lost for that matter. The other way that stocks can be taxed, however, is through dividends. So if you've got a stock that's paying you dividends, and the dividends are paid on an ongoing basis, well, then those dividends are taxed as dividend income when you receive the money. So you don't have to necessarily take it out of the stock per se. You know, for example, a lot of times companies pay dividends in the form of giving you more stock. And people get confused about this, and they say, well, I got stock, I didn't get cash. Well, okay, that's true, but the stock has a fair market value. And because the stock has a fair market value that was paid to you in the form of a dividend, that's income and it's taxable in the year you got it, even though you didn't, quote-unquote, take it out of the stock per se.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about people who need a consultation? Now, how would they go about consulting with someone such as yourself who's an expert?
Well, I can tell folks how they can consult with me. That's real simple. You just go to my website, danpilla.com. You buy any one of the books that we have off of my website, danpilla.com, and you'll get a free consultation with me. You get a free session with me right over the phone with me personally and directly, and you just buy any one of the books that we have, and you get a free consult with me.
That's fantastic. And so I was reading that you wrote an article, and I was curious about it because I hadn't heard about it, where you say Dayton to take Minnesota in the wrong direction. Why did you write that particular article, and why do you think it's wrong?
Well, I was talking about Governor Mark Dayton here in the state, who wanted to raise, who's pushing to raise the state's corporate income tax and the personal income tax on the highest earners in the state of Minnesota. And as a matter of economic policy, Rose, it's just simply wrong. You know, what you tax, you get less of. And so when you tax people that produce jobs and produce income and create opportunities for people, then you get less jobs and opportunities. It's just as simple as that. The fact of the matter is, and we see this with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, we see it now that with these corporate tax cuts, the corporate tax rate went from 35% down to 21%. It's a substantial cut. And we see corporations all over America that are now investing in infrastructure and employees. They're hiring workers. We now have reported by the Labor Department the lowest unemployment rate in America that we've had since 2000. All right, that's 18-year low. And if you go back behind 2000, you have to get into the late 1940s to find an unemployment rate that's as low as it is right now. And that's because corporations invest in themselves, they invest in their own growth, they invest in infrastructure, they invest in tools and equipment, they invest in people when their tax burdens are reduced. That's what they do because it increases profit. And so it is a positive. The tax cuts are always good for the economy, and tax increases always hurt the economy. And this is what I was telling Dayton in the article that I wrote, is you're taking Minnesota in the wrong direction when you want to increase taxes on corporations and high-income earners. You want to reduce the tax burdens across the board, not just for this group or that group. Rose, we want to reduce taxes across the board. I'm not talking about tax cuts for the rich. That mantra is nonsense. We got to give tax cuts across the board to everybody. That's what the Jobs Act did, and that's why it's helping to grow the economy and spur activity to the extent that it is.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I really worked really hard to promote President Trump, because he was a businessman, and I truly believe that the country was not being run like a business, although they kept many millions of people say we're a corporation. Well, if we're a corporation, hey, let's run it like a corporation, because most of you people would be fired.
Well, yeah, that there's no question about that. But the fact of the matter is the United States government has never been run like a business, and there's certain arguments you can make that would suggest that governments can't be businesses because of the nature of what they do, and there's some truth to that. But the fact of the matter is, from an economic standpoint, no business can run at the kind of massive deficits that the United States has been operating at. American families can't run their family of financial affairs with massive deficits the way the federal government has been doing for generations. The fact of the matter is that any responsible person will recognize that you cannot continue to spend more money than you take in and be better off in the long run as a result of that. It does not work, and it's not working, and it can't continue with the federal government. In that sense, it has to be run like a business where we've got to balance the budget and recognize, and that starts, Rose, with recognizing what the legitimate functions of government are, that there are certain things the federal government should not be doing, and it's not a matter of spending less money on those things. It's a matter of spending no money on those things.
Yeah, and it's also a matter of being responsible and ending the pork barrels and stop funneling our tax monies to their own advantage and to those of their allies and friends, because they're draining our economic system. They've been, not currently, but in the past, they were draining it to the point where we were on the verge of bankruptcy. It appeared in many, many credible reports by business magazines. So going to that, you wrote an article I thought was a funny title. On January 24, 2018, you said, U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar is an idiot.
U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah, her. Now, why did you write that particular article?
I wrote that particular article because she made a public statement that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was nothing but tax cuts for the rich, and that it would cause deficits and would lead to unemployment. I mean, what she did in that statement is she showed her absolute profound ignorance of basic economics and for the plain language of the Tax Cuts Act. You know, the left continues to call the Jobs Act tax cuts for the rich, and that's what Klobuchar was saying. She's just repeating that mantra, it's tax cuts for the rich. It's that. The fact of the matter is the highest income people in America aren't going to see any significant tax cuts under the Jobs Act. The vast majority of the tax cuts are going to come to people that are in middle income ranges. As I said, 80% of the people are going to get a tax cut under this bill, and those people are falling in the lower income ranges, not the higher income ranges. So what I'm saying is the upper 1%, let's say, are not going to see tax cuts under the Jobs Act. It's the regular Jane and Joe American families that are going to see the tax cut, the tax relief under this bill. All right. So right off the bat, she's just fundamentally wrong about her claim.
Oh yes, absolutely. So. I'm glad you clarified that for our audience and for me. And so my last question to you is, and it's always been on my mind, because they have never totally repealed the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, ACA.
Well, they didn't repeal any of it, Rose. It's not total repeal. They didn't repeal any of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, now let me tell you what they did do, all right? And there's confusion about this. They repealed the Jobs Act repealed the penalty for not having insurance under the Jobs Act, but that only kicks in 2019. It does not kick in 2018. Just the penalty has been repealed. The mandate to have insurance and all the rest of the Obamacare, every bit of it's still intact.
That's what my big fear was, and that's what I kept telling people, that Obamacare is not repealed until it's totally repealed, nullified. It should be nullified on its face, period, because I wrote the first blog, Dan, that said Obamacare is unconstitutional, illegal, and unlawful, and there's no constitutional authority. And part of my blog was read on the floor of the House with my name. And because I said it's just like extortion, somebody putting an imaginary gun to your head and saying,
sure,
"Bail
sure.
her out."
Yeah, there's never been a provision of law, Rose, that required American citizens, and there's no model in the Constitution for this whatsoever. There's no provision that could require an American citizen to go purchase a specific product or service in the
right.
marketplace, whether from a government agency or a private company. The idea of such a thing is so foreign to the model of the Constitution that it's just completely, it's blasphemous is what it is. It's legal blasphemy. That's what it is.
Thank you very much, because that's my same theory about, and not theory, I think it's a fact, about Obamacare.
Yep.
And I think they should just nullify it on its face, considering the man can't even produce a certified U.S. birth certificate, which should make it ineligible, should wipe it out, period, anyway. But, you know, I mean, people need to be really concerned about that, Obamacare, because it's still in place, and they think it's gone. It's not gone.
Yeah,
it's
there. Not gone. It is not gone.
Thank you very much for clarifying that. And Dan, is there any special tip you want to give our audience about any of their rights, or is the IRS friendly or non-friendly?
Well, yeah. Let's talk about taxpayer rights for just a minute. First of all, Rose, just generally speaking, there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. And so anybody that's got a problem out there that's dealing with the IRS, you know, if you've got a tax debt that you owe and can't pay, if you've not filed tax returns for years, you know, Rose, I talk to people all the time that haven't filed returns for 2 years, 4 years, 10 years, sometimes 20 years, and you know, of course, these folks are sweating bullets and they're afraid to go to the mailbox or the post office. You know, they're afraid of a knock on the door. I had a friend of mine that was struggling with this problem for years, and he said he couldn't even order a pizza because he was so stressed out at the sound of a knock on the door. He couldn't cope with the sound of the knock on the door, and so he just, you know, he just was living his life like this for years, until he got a hold of me and we got his situation fixed. And there's people all over the country that have these kind of problems that need to know that you can get these resolved through negotiation with the IRS, and there's specific programs they have. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, walks you through all of these programs and takes you step-by-step through how to do this stuff to get yourself into a position where you get this problem behind you once and for all. There's no, you don't have to live with the stress. You don't have to live with the anxiety. You've got so many rights as a taxpayer that if you understand how these rights work, you can keep the IRS from running you over, and we can get you into a position here where you can get your situation resolved.
That's fantastic, because, I mean, it's similar to the family law court or a criminal court that's corrupted and just drags you down, and keeps serving you papers and dragging you back and forth. That's a similar situation where people are afraid to answer the phone, open their mail. People don't realize this is happening, but it is happening because of the corruption in the system. But in this case, it's not so much the corruption as much as the fear of the IRS, I would say.
Right, right. That's right. It's the fear. People are afraid of the IRS. And the thing is, Rose, they don't think they have any rights.
There's IRS on it.
Right. That's right. They get anxiety from those three letters, IRS. But the thing is, people don't think they have any rights when they're dealing with the IRS. That's the thing. People think that the IRS can just run you over. It can do anything that it wants to do. There's nothing you can do about it. There's no way to stop them. And Rose, that's just simply not true. It just simply is not true.
Okay. Well, thank God, because you've written 15 self-help books, and you've also have a website and lots of information. You lecture, you consult with people. I mean, thank God for Dan Pilla. So, Dan, on closing, I want you to tell us some of the names of your books and what you think is really important and for them to check out, and any of your websites that they can contact
you. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Rose. The website, again, is danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. A couple of books you can look at is, first of all, How to Get Tax Amnesty. We've been talking about that. That's the book that walks you step-by-step through reducing wage levies, eliminating bank levies, getting rid of tax liens, you know, settling your case for less than you owe, that sort of thing. My book, The IRS Problem Solver, is a very general book, Rose. If you don't have an IRS problem right now and you want to keep it that way, then the IRS Problem Solver will help you deal with very simple problems and keep little things from growing into big things. And I've got the book, How to Win Your Tax Audit, if you're going through an audit right now or you think you might be at an audit risk or you just want to learn how the process works. This is a very, very important book, and it's the most thorough analysis on the audit process that's ever been written, and I show you step by step how to defend yourself in an audit. And then another book of interest, if you've got, it's called How to Eliminate Taxes on Debt Forgiveness. If you've been the victim of a 1099, that 1099C reported by a bank or a credit card company or a lending company that says we forgave your debt, now you owe money to the IRS, then you need to get the book How to Eliminate Taxes on Debt Forgiveness, because I show you how to use secrets that almost nobody knows, Rose, in the tax law to avoid paying taxes on debt forgiveness legally and properly.
Oh, that's fantastic. Just fantastic, Dan. And, gee, God bless you. God bless you for all your wealth of information and knowledge and wanting to share it with the public and help. You're like a helping hand to all Americans. And thank you so much. And keep up the good work. And we'll be talking to you again soon, I hope.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Thank you, Rose. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Dan Pilla. Dan Pilla has left the building. He's left you with the world of wealth and information on how to contact him, how to buy his books, get a free consultation by just buying one of his books, and go to his website. One of his websites is heartland.org, or you can just plug in his name, Dan Pilla, on Amazon.com as well as on the computer, and you will find a myriad of sites for you to peruse and to read and learn and help yourself become enlightened, empowered, and become proactive. Because if you don't take control of your own life, it's just going to get worse, and the fear is going to keep increasing, and you're going to end up possibly physically and mentally, emotionally ill, because you will be afraid to open the mail. You will be afraid to open the door. You'll be afraid to answer the phone. So don't let any of that happen to you or your loved ones. Dan was saying, and we talked about it a little bit, it happens in the family law courts a lot. I'm an advocate for justice, and I've been an advocate for justice for almost 25 years. And I have personal experience with injustices, legal abuses, and so I took that experience and I did research, took law classes. I am college educated, and I created a movement 20 years ago, 2015, 20 years ago, something like that. And across this country, and I became a whistleblower, not realizing that I was going to be a whistleblower or start a movement. It just was a mission. And I took on this mission, and this organization spread, the word spread across the nation. I probably helped thousands of people myself, if it's not by my writings, published writings, books, radio shows, cable TV shows, and so forth, and one-on-one consultations. And so these incidents involve custody, support, not legal advice. It is information that can enlighten and empower people that you can't get out of a law book, and no judge and no lawyer is going to give you this information. And so when I tell people, which is on my book, Fight Back Legal Abuse, How to Protect Yourself from Your Own Attorney, which you can get a free copy of 10 tips on how to hire a lawyer when you sign up for ColumboChronicles.com, where you can ask questions about your issues, your concerns. You will not get legal advice. You will get suggestions and information.
And it could save you thousands of dollars. It could save you a headache. It could save you time and energy just by finding out information that you do not know and can hopefully use. And so anyway, this movement now is really coming to fruition in today's world because there's so much corruption, and this corruption has spread across the country. And not all judges are unethical, by no means. And I'm not talking about all judges. I am not talking about all lawyers. I know some wonderful lawyers who are ethical, who do their best to try and win the case, and that's all they can do. They can do their best. But sometimes you do get incompetent lawyers, lazy lawyers, who take on too many cases, and your case becomes less important to them. They just want to get rid of it. They can become unprepared. So you really have to be proactive in your case. Because if you're not proactive and you just hand over a $10,000 retainer fee and you think that this man is going to save you, he may, but again, he may not. So many people, like you said, end up living in fear because they continue to get served court documents and harassed by just possibly even by the police if false reports are filed, false accusations are made. Lots of things can happen. So there's no such thing as a simple divorce. 98% of the time. There's no such thing as a simple custody case, probably 98% of the time. There's no such thing as a financial resolution through mediation or arbitration, probably 98% of the time. Somebody's going to always be unhappy. My suggestion to you is be a little bit unhappy, take a little bit less if you can, and try to mediate your issue with a mediator and one lawyer, have them type up your papers and represent your decisions between yourselves and file them with the court and walk away. Walk away with your assets, walk away with your children, walk away with your property before it's too late. So God bless you. God bless America. And, of course, I will be back, God willing, next Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. with another very prominent guest. We always have prominent guests, amazing, awesome guests who can either be talking about Hollywood, they could be talking about politics, they could be teaching the law, they could be talking about animal rights, human rights, immigration. They are experts and authors, and their concern is your concern. Knowledge is power. So bookmark Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m., and be sure to check out ColomboChronicles.com. Submit your questions, sign up, and submit your questions. And save yourself a lot of headaches.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.